This Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. Get $10 off your first order by using code RTRS. That even counts for Tuesday's closeout game. And LL Pavorsky, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. On today's show, we will talk about Sixers Nets Game 4. I don't know if it's an all-time Sixers playoff game, but certainly of the last 10 years, I would say it's an all-time Sixers playoff game. Great game. Big win from the Sixers. We will talk about all that. Before we get going, Lottery Party t-shirts. You have to order by Tuesday if you want it in time for the Lottery Party. So Tuesday at midnight is your deadline. If you want that Party Boy jersey, the Ship of Theseus shirt, all of them, the Cuss Cries, the Core 4, go to RightsRickySanchez.com. While you're there, the final Lottery Party, tickets are $7 and proceeds go to the Providence Animal Center, where you can save puppies and cats, and Coded by Kids, where you can teach little kids to be entrepreneurs and eventually give you a job. Tickets as well at RightsRickySanchez.com. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair. That with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Jew runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who never had a doubt during this game at all. That is Mike Levin. Whew. What a game.
All right. Wow. I mean, very close to it. They never win this game, but yeah. You've been seeing it over the course of the playoffs where it goes down to the wire.
Over the and course the worst of the playoffs
so far. I mean, not just the Sixers, every other team.
Okay.
Where like it happened in the Indiana series, where like late in the game, there's just like one weird bad turnover that like the ball like gets tipped out of bounds, and that happened to Brooklyn. And it was like, oh, we are the better team. We are these guys. We should win. They should have to play perfect basketball to beat us, and they didn't. We almost didn't. It was a great game. They won. I'm mad about a bunch of things, but like 3-1 lead, winning that game without Jimmy, fun. This was like a team building, like they're coming together type win. I mean, gotta feel good.
Yeah, there's a lot of things on the list. JJ Redick hitting a shot when he hadn't hit a shot all night. Mike Scott hitting the big three-pointer, and Embiid just all the way through the fight. TJ McConnell getting more fired up on the bench than any player ever in the history of players. Just a lot of things to. Why don't we start at the beginning of the game with the two differences between this game and the prior game at the start? Embiid playing. And the Nets starting Dudley and starting Caris LeVert and changing up the starting lineup, which seemed to have a positive effect for them. Obviously, they put their more effective players in the starting lineup. And then there are a lot of things I want to talk about Embiid. But just the... All right, how about this? It's always better to have Embiid on the court. But this plays, doesn't play, maybe will play thing... feels like, I can't tell how much of a deal it is, but it seems like a significant deal for a team that has not played a ton of games together, as great as he is. I don't know that there's obviously nothing they can do about it, but I think that's part of the reason why he started Monroe in the last game, like to at least in a theoretical sense, Monroe plays in the same way that Embiid does, you know, like. Well, like, you know what I mean? Like, he will have post-ups. He'll do the same thing on offense. Like, I don't know.
Think that was to, like, establish some level of stability. And I think also keeping Boban, like, hey, you're the guy that's coming off the bench. You, mm-hmm. These are the minutes you play. Like, some level of continuity there. And I don't disagree with it. I think I mean, Embiid looked great. Like, he looked really, really great. Was he 100%? No, but I think he was a lot bouncier looking than he was in previous games of the series.
I agree.
Especially defensively. Six blocks, just really impressive. A lot of closeout ones. I was kind of surprised he didn't block that Joe Harris layup to give the Nets the lead at the end, but I think he thought that was going to be a wraparound pass to Jared Allen, so he didn't want to get off his feet. But, man, he's great. Plus 18. They were... minus 14 in minutes he wasn't on the court. Like, that's hard to do. He's really good, and I'm glad he's ours. I do think that the offense slows down just a little bit when he's in there, because they want to get him the ball, and there's not as many shooters that you're confident in that are willing to step into it. So you sacrifice that. Like, I'm fine sacrificing like a run and gun, more modern style offense, just for how good he is defensively, because he is. I mean, he's unbelievable. And the Nets, I think the Nets found a bunch of things. They beat him on a couple things. Like, Caris LeVert played a almost flawless game, except for going 4 of 9 from the foul line. He was great. He was good. He played 42 minutes. He was coming off those pick and rolls. And it was either I'm getting to the rim or I'm hitting this. He didn't take as many floaters. He was very willing to find Jared Allen on those rolls. And, you know, we talked about it on the last podcast, but they got a lot of lob opportunities this game that they hadn't gotten in the past two games. Jared Allen had 21 points on 11 shots. And that's, I think, how they stayed in the game a lot. And obviously, Dinwiddie, Russell, and LeVert playing them together was just, especially without Jimmy in the second half, it's just like nearly impossible for the Sixers to just cover those guys. One of them is, you know, going to seek out JJ and throw him in a screen, and it's going to be a trouble. But keeping that Brooklyn offense to 17 points in the fourth quarter, I mean, ballsy fucking win. Yeah.
So I want to go back to Embiid, who was, I agree with you, was more spry, I think, and looked a little less sort of injured this game than he had in the previous two games he's played in this series. The only game that I can recall since he started being injured this year that he looked similar was the Milwaukee game. I thought he looked similar in that one. This was, I thought, one of the best games Embiid has played. First of all, you see when Butler is gone, just about every play, successful play offensively, went through Embiid after the Butler ejection. I thought, obviously, he has scored more points and been more unstoppable offensively, but there were two things that stood out, and I saw we both tweeted about one of them, and the other one was obvious. But defensively around the rim, he was... I know he gets talked about as like potentially the best defensive player in the league, but I still somehow either think he's underrated or not given enough credit. Maybe those two things are the same thing. Defensively, his ability to like maneuver his body to block a shot that it doesn't look like he's in position to block, mm-hmm. without having to like jump high, or like he has a really keen sense, the same way that Harden has this sense of like finding space on the floor and getting a shot off. I almost feel like Embiid has that same sense defensively to block shots. And you also see the effect of that on players who run through the lane. There was one where Dinwiddie, like, I don't know, started going through the lane and just did a TJ and came out the other side because yep. Embiid was there.
Yep.
And then the other thing, which, you know, if it becomes a consistent part of Embiid's game, he could be the most unstoppable center offensively in the history of the league, is he threw 4 or 5 really nice quick passes off of a double team to hit Mike Scott for a 3. I think Mike Scott missed it, but like Butler for a wide open 3,
yep.
Simmons when he cut into the lane. Just like, somebody tweeted to me that it seemed like for this game, he just turned the skill on in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was unbelievable. The passes were great. It was just a great Embiid game overall.
Yeah. I mean, I think those, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like the numbers of Embiid getting the ball in the post and the defense throwing a double team at him were not good all season long. I think today really was the first time I saw him very, very willing to quickly diagnose that and find shooters in that opposite corner. And I think a couple times to Ben underneath, like just really, really impressive stuff. That is like next level superstar level stuff. Especially from a big man. I think you tweeted that Embiid is like, I know this is your own beef that you're dealing with, but the Gobert Jokic love from people and saying Embiid is the best of both of them. I think that's somewhat true. And obviously having things that neither of those guys can do at all. And him opening up that quick passing decision, those quick passing decisions is huge for his development. And I would also say, a couple times he saw guys just a little late, like recognizing guys are open. I think that's the next step. Like Simmons is so good at passing guys open, and Embiid's mm-hmm. just, you know, not on that level quite. But like there were a couple times when he saw that they were open and then made the pass, and then the defense collapsed on him. And that's, you know, that regular season, they probably get there. But in the playoffs, they're scrambling so much that everyone's like onto 100. So I don't think those were very bad passes. I just think he's got that's the next development for him is him, you know, seeing what's going to happen and then passing those guys open.
Well, yeah. And it's sort of like when you think about a quarterback, like the great, great, great actual passers are the ones who, you know where the guy is going to be and put the ball there yep. as opposed to waiting for him to get there and just throwing it as hard as he can. And I think, Simmons is obviously on the other side of that. And Embiid, I don't think Embiid is on the opposite side, but he's clearly like on his way there.
Yeah, got a way to go.
Yeah, it was an incredible game from Embiid. What do you want to talk about next? I've such a long list. Why don't you?
Well, let's get into the fight. That seems worth it. So everybody listen to this, watch the game, but that Embiid hard block / foul. I don't mind it being called a foul. I think he got a lot of ball, but I'm fine with that being called a foul. Absolutely.
Mostly because it looked like a foul, even if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Like in real time, he did it so hard.
Yeah.
And Allen fell down. Yeah. I'm fine with it being called a foul as well. But even though it looked clean.
Right. But the idea that I think maybe in retrospect, if the fight didn't happen after, I think that's just a regular foul and they don't do anything. But the idea that that's a flagrant one in the game, that's ridiculous. And he got mostly ball. Like, sure, call a foul on it, hard block, whatever, that happens. But like the idea that they'd give Embiid a second flagrant point, where if he would get to 4 points in the playoffs, then he would get suspended for a game, that's horrible. That's dangerous and horrible and stupid. And I hope the league rescinds that flagrant one, because for that play to result in a flagrant is a joke. That's the most frustrating part. To toss Jimmy and Jared Dudley, okay, whatever. Like you want to get those guys out. Like absolutely. I don't think Simmons should have gotten assessed for the technical on that. He just, you know, there's a scrum. He's getting in there. If Simmons gets a technical, D'Angelo should have absolutely got a technical. He's the one who's shoving people into the audience, into the stands to begin with. But the flagrant one is really what pissed me off.
Yeah, I think the flagrant almost got called potentially because of the fight itself.
Yeah.
Almost. Did they call it? Yeah. And then Simmons was only in it because Jared Dudley pulled him to the ground. And I know it's hard to see that, but like, and D'Angelo Russell ran to the fight, pushed a ref in the back, resulting everyone in falling down. So like, in one of the rare times, I'll just out and out, agree with Bill Simmons. I really would have been fine if nobody getting ejected, even though Dudley was being a dipshit. It's the playoffs. Like, are we really ejecting guys over that? But they better rescind that Simmons.
Yeah.
Simmons,
I think Jared Dudley should have definitely gotten ejected. He was chirping to everyone all game. He was just trying to instigate stuff. And he's the one who started that whole fight. Jimmy, like, pushing a guy who's shoved his guy is like that technical foul. Sure. But like to toss Jimmy also, I think that's over the top. But, you know, people on Twitter, everyone's mad. Everyone's going to, like, you know, sort of return to their sides and think that Embiid should have gotten tossed for that Jared Allen elbow, which it was a flagrant fine, but you don't get tossed for an in-game play like that. Everyone's just mad. It's stupid. But I think that tossing Jimmy and Dudley is like fine, but the flagrant really fucking pissed me off. And if they rescind it, then I'll be fine. But like, that's, you know, Jared Dudley's out to do that. He's doing that stuff. He's trying to instigate. He's trying to get people to draw technicals and flagrants and all that shit. And the refs rewarded him for it after watching it for like 10 minutes. That's like, just not a good look.
It's pretty crazy that Jared Dudley is like the the guy that is in the middle of all this.
Yeah. Well, Embiid, there's a quote that just came out. Embiid, I didn't watch the video, but the quote is on Jared Dudley. Embiid, first of all, he's a nobody. When opponents do stuff like that, they're trying to get us out of our game. I'm too valuable for that, which is true. And I'm glad Embiid walked away and had nothing to do. Embiid was so not involved in that fight, whatever. Even after getting shoved by Jared Dudley, he just puts his hands up and goes, what the fuck's going on? And just like kind of walked away. And for them to give him a flagrant there, I mean, if he got somewhat in the fight and had to be like held back, then it's like, all right, give him a flagrant, let him calm down. But like, come on, that's bullshit. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
So game five will be the potential closeout game. And that means that it's a good time to talk about our sponsor, SeatGeek, Mike. SeatGeek. Do it. Say it.
SeatGeek.
Look, if you want to go to game five, everybody wants to go to game five. You want to see the closeout game in the playoffs. If you need tickets for that or anything else, you want to go to SeatGeek.
Couch nerd.
SeatGeek. And its newest sister company, Couch Nerd. For a long time, buying tickets is a pain in the ass. There's all these different sites to go to. What SeatGeek does is, and this is why I only use SeatGeek, is that it takes all of the sites and puts them in one place. Right now, if you go to SeatGeek and you want tickets to Game 5, you can get in there for $64 a ticket for good seats. And what SeatGeek does is it rates the deal. So if it's green, it's a good deal. If it's red, it's not a good deal. If it's yellow, it's an okay deal. It's the only place to buy tickets. 50,000 five-star reviews, which is way more than we have, and we have a lot of five-star reviews. Here's the best part of it. Right now, if you use SeatGeek and get tickets to Game 5 or any game, maybe the second round, you get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase just because you listen to us. They support us, so you should support them. Use promo code RTRS for $10 off your first purchase. You can use it for Game 5 tickets, for second round tickets, concert tickets, comedy, whatever you want. Use promo code RTRS for $10 off your first purchase. SeatGeek. SeatGeek. SeatGeek.
Bench Dweeb.
Wait, what was that one?
Bench Dweeb.
Bench Dweeb. I like that too. How about good teammate Jimmy Butler coming to the defense of Joel Embiid? Not only good teammate, but some guy did tweet at me, if we have a guy with neck tattoos, why is he not the one in the fight?
The shocking thing that Mike Scott was not involved in that whatsoever is really funny.
Yeah. I like that. And I like, you know, Jimmy wants to be in the fight. So it's a good excuse for him to get in there. But I'd much rather him get thrown out than Embiid getting thrown out. So they won that one for Jimmy. Good teammate, Jimmy Butler.
He's been great, man. You're coming around to play out to this Jimmy situation.
How could I not? He's played well during the playoffs. He's everything that I want him to be.
Absolutely. I'm just glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear that. He only played 24 minutes. He got that play was in the fight was in the third. He probably would have ended with like 18 to 20 points or so. Like just solid, composed on both ends, defense. And I love this guy. I absolutely love him. And I will say, while we're still in the fight, I was watching the game with Alyssa, and nothing gets her more riled up than like a fight or any sort of like bullshit foul call. She'll be on Instagram like vaguely paying attention and or like, you know, here and there, like look at being into it. And then a fight happens and suddenly there's just like blood coming out of her mouth and she just like becomes the most Philadelphia person you can imagine. And that's why I love her. Things are good.
I can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So Val's birthday is next week and she's going out with her friends today. They have like a hotel room or something. So she left at 3:00. I thought that was all I would hear from her. Get a text from her. What's going on with the fight?
There you go.
What are you talking about? She said, I love fights. And once I would say probably, 3 weeks into us dating, she almost got into a fist fight with Yankee fans at a bar in Philly during the World Series.
You said that before on the podcast, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, yeah. Love that our significant others like the fracas.
She was just hurling insults at Jared Dudley, who I said looks like a potato when he's left outside.
Yeah, I heard you say that. I think you confused like potatoes for your thumb. Like I don't.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of looks like a thumb. I think that's if you look at everybody long enough, especially if they don't have much hair. I think that's pretty clear. But really, potato looking guy for sure.
Definitely. What else? What else do I have here? A lot of, I thought a good adjustment from Brett Brown. This year, Brooklyn was the worst team in the league defending pick and rolls. And the first half with Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler with Embiid had, I think, more pick and roll than I think I've seen the Sixers run in any first half this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Nice little adjustment there, I thought. And those guys are guarded by smaller, they're all guarded by smaller guys, too. So I like, you know, the bevy of mismatches that those things create.
Yeah. Tobias didn't seem to be hitting his catch and shoot shots today. Didn't seem like he was getting his feet underneath him well. But with the ball in his hands was getting to his spots, taking clean looks, had a bunch of nice passes, had 6 assists, 0 turnovers. 24 points on 20 shots, didn't hit any threes, but I thought he played a really nice game. Some over-dribbling, I think sometimes he gets a little tunnel vision. There was one time when he over-dribbled so much, Mike Scott was wide open on the wing, and then Boban just kept trying to screen for him and help him out, but then get charged, called for an offensive foul. That was tough, but I think this was definitely like a, you know, he wasn't as electric as he was in game three, but Tobias was for sure back to his like very reliable, consistent, good teammate, like doing what it takes stuff.
Yeah, he was weird in the second half, I thought. I thought he played really well in the first half. It's funny, one of those over dribble plays actually turned out to be an and one, a really mm-hmm. like, you know, it was like 2 attempts at a pick and roll, and then he backed the guy down, mm-hmm. and then it was the full Tobias Harris experience. It was weird the second half. He was like oddly deferential on his shot. There were two of them, I thought, like down the stretch. One was in an Embiid basket. Oh, no. I think it was actually on the play where Mike Scott hit that. Yeah. It was on the play where Mike Scott hit that three. Harris had like a wide open jumper and he passed it to Embiid, who couldn't handle it. I don't know. He was sort of weirdly deferential with his shot.
Are you talking about at the end?
Yeah.
I liked that pass. I think it was Joe Harris that kind of came over at the end, and I saw you can like see that developing. Embiid wasn't, you know, on his blind side. He didn't know it was coming. And for Embiid to still like gather that and toss it to Mike Scott for that corner three was just an unbelievable play. And like the kind of play that, you know, in that Celtics series last year, it's like, you know, when Embiid had Horford underneath and just like missed those layups, and Embiid had missed a couple like bunnies on like a couple possessions before, and Simmons had missed a couple bunnies earlier in the fourth. And it was just like, is this just going to be one of those things where they just can't like kind of get out of their own way and hit like a clean like layup and just, or just pivot and dunk. But Embiid making that play and hanging onto the ball to get that ball to Mike Scott was huge. And hey, a nice Mike Scott game, just a really, really nice, exactly what you want Mike Scott game. Played well on defense for the second game in a row, stepped into a couple threes, was active on the boards, 8 rebounds, was, you know, huge. Him and Ennis were both huge without Jimmy there. I think, you know, are they capable of staying in front of LeVert or Dinwiddie all game long? No, but like, you know, as far as bench pieces go that can somewhat compete on both ends, I was very proud of them tonight.
I want to give the guy proper credit. Dave Markow on Twitter says, of course, Mike Scott hits the game winner on 420. not suggesting anything about Mike Scott, but I have said that he has high eyes. We were just talking about Harris. You talked about Ennis. I don't know. Ennis on defense on those guys.
Yeah, a couple of them. Like, I think he settled down, but yeah, for sure, a couple times.
A willing defender,
absolutely.
I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, but certainly had trouble staying in front of him.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a game where you're just like fighting for your life. Like you could tell that this was Brooklyn's like, we're going to give everything we got. This is our last gasp. Like they're faster to every ball. They were, you know, especially early on, they got 7 offensive rebounds in the first quarter. The Sixers turned the ball over 7 times in the first quarter. Really ugly. The rest of the game, Sixers only had 11 turnovers the last 3 quarters, which is not great, but, you know, better. And only let up six offensive rebounds the rest of the game. So they really tightened up. I thought it was, they made some smart defensive choices. Not all the time, but I think they made a couple. I think doubling off of Trevion Graham when he was in the game, because he was not hitting, he's just not a threat from the outside, was huge. So if you could double off whoever's got Trevion Graham to double off, just like get the ball out of Dinwiddie or LeVert's hands, because they're so, so tough to stop. I think that was smart, but it's just really hard, especially without Jimmy, I said before, but to cover all of those Brooklyn creators without you know, all your roster intact. And it's tough because this was the game, you know, last game we were sort of upset that Embiid didn't play, but Amir wasn't, but he was active and Amir wasn't. I checked in on this and found out that like the actives and inactives had to be like given out earlier. There's like a deadline earlier in the day, so they weren't sure. And so same with this game. They obviously, if they knew Embiid was playing, they would have not had Amir active. They would have had one of Zaire or Korkmaz. And so when Jimmy went out, not that you're dying to go to Zaire or Korkmaz at the end here, but it would have been nice to have just in case. And it you know, had this game gone to overtime or somebody got in foul trouble or something, and it had five fouls, like it could have gotten ugly. But I think that's sort of just what you live with when you're, you know, you're, it's Embiid's a game time decision every game.
So I have two conversation things here. Can we talk about a rule that I, so there are a couple of rules in sports, clear path one being one of them,
yeah,
that I think the punishment outweighs the actual crime. And so in football, I always thought holding should be a 5-yard penalty and not 10. And I think defensive pass interference should be a 15-year-old penalty, not spot of the foul. And in basketball, like, 2 shots in the ball seems like too much to me for sure. Clear path. And it's so much that nobody ever calls it. Like, even when it looks pretty obvious that it should be called, I think it should be 1 shot in the foul, your thoughts. Your 1 shot in the ball, your thoughts.
I don't mind that. I hear that it's, yeah, that it's egregious. I would say either 1 shot in the ball or just like awarded 2 points.
Wow. That seems, awarded 2 points, yeah, seems pretty punitive.
I mean,
as well.
I mean, the idea of a awarded 2 points and also a foul. So it's, you know, it's slightly worse than just letting somebody have an open breakaway dunk because you fouled them. So you still get charged with that, but then they get the points. I don't mind 1 shot in the ball though. I think you're right.
Yeah. So somebody said to me, they were like, well, otherwise people would just foul them all the time. And because and they do it all the time anyway. And really when somebody's going for a layup and you just grab his like wrap him up, I don't know what the difference is. You're just preventing 2 points that way,
yeah,
too. So,
yeah. And I think that should have been a clear path. Maybe it's like because there was a clear path in the game before where it was like, oh, he got him like a half millisecond later. It's like there's really no difference to that. It's the spirit of the rule is this guy's going to get a breakaway layup or dunk. I'm going to foul him. And for them to take that foul, whether, you know, a foot, the foot difference between getting him before he's passed you or waiting until after, whatever, it doesn't make a difference to me. I think that should have been a clear path. And I also agree that it's a little, the penalty is a little too punitive for me.
So after the game the other night, whereas you thought that Greg Monroe did a pretty good job, I thought he was terrible, but there was a lot of Twitter, why didn't we play Jonah Bolden?
Mm-hmm.
Including
me, by the way.
Including you. And I
especially,
mentioned
sorry,
that,
especially on Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, when Ku Boban, right, just like couldn't really handle.
Right. I mentioned that sometimes people, and this happens with guys that we don't see that much. It happened definitely with, I think, Rashawn Holmes. Like, people think about the idea of a guy rather than the reality. And somebody asked me, what's the worst that could happen if they had put Bolden in there? And I said, well, the worst that could happen is that it could have been worse than having Monroe in there. And like, that's what the worst that could happen is. And man, fucking Bolden was
bad.
Like, that might have been what was he in the game? 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
3 minutes,
It was three of the worst minutes I've seen during the playoffs.
No, it was really bad. He seemed kind of clueless. I mean, and it's, you know, to give him a little bit of credit, it's hard to just come in when you don't think you're going to play. All of a sudden, it's the end of the second quarter, and it's like, hey, you're in. And it's like, you know, it takes you a second to get your bearings and get warm. I think he stepped into a decent-looking three that I was happy he took, but back-rimmed it. Got to the line after an offensive rebound. But then he also, like, turned the ball over and, like, fouled somebody for an N1 and kind of looked clueless out there. So, I don't know. I mean, look, he's a rookie. Bad. This is, like, kind of what you expect, but there's a level of frustration for me personally that somebody tweeted about it. I think it might have been either Newbeck or Matt Carey or Rich Hoffman, I forget. But that this should have been, like, over the course of the season, you know that Embiid is going to be dicey all the time. What is this?
Sorry, I was going to cue up the sound of Embiid calling Jared Dudley a nobody.
Oh, wow.
When you were finished.
I thought that was like a like a Oscars level, just like playing me off. I'm like, I definitely talked longer than that before.
I'm sorry.
Okay. But I do think that it should have been over the course of the season, should have been like, we're getting Jonah Bolden ready to be playable for 12 whatever minutes in the playoffs. And he's going to know his role. We're going to teach him. We're going to work him. And he's going to get better. And I think he's going to get better over the course of the next couple seasons. He is still a rookie. But it's frustrating that he is just not playable when you know that Embiid was going to be, you know, for the rest of his career, really, he's going to be this level of like, you never know what you have, basically. So, I mean, I'd still play Boban over him in this series, but I would like to give Jonah some run. But I also hear that he's just not prepared for it. There was one play when one of the plays he was in there was even in addition to the and one was Joe Harris got JJ on a back cut, and rather than protect the rim, Jonah like followed Jared Allen out to the 3-point line, which is just like, that's pointless. So he's just not, he's not a smart player right now. He makes dumb mistakes, and I think he's still talented. I still believe in him as a future piece, especially on a rookie deal. But I think this is more of a mistake over the course of a season to carry this many centers and like they're not being enough, you know, playable ones.
Well, I want to agree on one thing and push back on another. I want to push back on the they didn't get him ready thing. We're not two things. We're not in the position anymore where when a guy sucks, the Sixers aren't like good enough or bad enough to just let him play. Like the guy played 15 minutes a game this year.
But in how many of those games? He also had
45 games.
DMPs.
Yeah. 45 games. But I think we can say Jonah Bolden is 23 years old, and we had three rookies come in this year. First of all, the Shamet, who also a rookie, also taken late in the first round, like younger than Jonah Bolden, and looked like he had a clue a lot quicker than Jonah Bolden did.
For sure.
And Zaire Smith and Shake Milton, like each played like five games and somehow like looked like if they had played 15 minutes a game for 45 games, they would be playable now. Yeah.
Center and point guard are the toughest positions to like get to like figure out, especially defensively for a center. It's tough for him to get there. And center is not his natural position. So they're asking him to do a lot. I get all of that stuff is true, but it would have been nice to, there were times when he was out of the rotation when it would have been like, just, I don't think he's bad. I think he's inexperienced and I think he has a somewhat low basketball IQ, but there were games when he looked good. Obviously the Minnesota game that we were at, like he kind of won them that game. And the shot is absolutely streaky as hell and the defense is streaky as hell, but it would have been nice going into the playoffs knowing that, okay, we have Embiid, Boban can play here or there in different matchups. But if you can get Bolden to work as a small ball five that can also protect the rim a little bit and stretch the floor, then like that's huge. And they didn't, whether that's Jonah's fault or the coaching, it's probably some hybrid of both. It would have been nice if he was there and he's not right now.
Yeah. I will play you that sound of Joel Embiid calling Jared Dudley a nobody right after we talk about our other sponsor for this podcast, LL Pavorsky Jewelers. Mike, I want you to guess how many Right Streaky Sanchez listeners have bought engagement rings from LL. Guess.
Real people, fake people.
How many fake people?
122.
And then only four real ones?
Yeah.
Oh, I've met more than four real ones, unless they're paid actors. LL Pavorsky Jewelers has sold somewhere in the neighborhood of 126 engagement rings to Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners, the only sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast that has been to every lottery party with his own VIP section. Did not have a VIP section of the first one, I think, or the second one, but the final four, he definitely did. You know, if you buy a ring from LL, you get invited as a VIP to the weirdest party in the history of Philadelphia. So that's the kind of guy he is. You walk into LL Pavorsky Jewelers, it's not big. You're not, you know, hounded by salespeople. It's just LL there with a little tray of chocolates, some cool bottled water for you to sip on, and just an amazing selection of jewelry for a great price from an honest man who looks dapper in a suit and maybe tweets a little too much about the Sixers. If you want to buy an engagement ring from LL, make call him or contact him in some way so he can know what you're looking for before you go in there. 215-627-2252. Tweet at him at LL Pavorsky, or you can go to llpavorsky.com to send him an email. For every podcast, makes donations to our charities who will both be on site at the lottery party, Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
No dumpy thumb-looking motherfuckers allowed.
All right, here you go. Here is the post-game interview on TNT with Joel Embiid. It's about 40 seconds.
When Jared Dudley got in your face in the third quarter, what did you make of the whole incident?
I mean, first of all, he's a nobody, so... And when, you know, opponents trying to do stuff like that, that's just to get us out of the game. Especially, I'm too valuable for my team. That's why I didn't react. I did not do anything. And I didn't think I was a flagrant foul because I played the ball too. But in that type of situation, I just got to stay composed and be mature and let it go because my teammates need me more than they need him. So, you know, I just got to be mature.
There we go. He's a nobody.
Yeah.
The war with Jared Dudley. We will always remember this as the Jared Dudley series. Also, as Mike Weber notes, this also puts whatever team Jared Dudley's on next year as a potential for fly the process wherever. He says even if it's a European team, we'll go there too.
Yeah. I mean, he played well in that. I thought it was a pretty ballsy move to do the after he hits a three, to do the arms out thing that Ben did. I thought that was pretty funny. It's fun. I mean, I wish it was someone better than Jared Dudley, because this anytime, I think, you know, every time anything happens, it's like, well, he's Jared Dudley, and then if he beats you, it's like, well, Jared Dudley beat you, and then anything like that. So
yeah.
It's a one-sided fight, and I think there was, honestly, we're in a very similar series to the Miami series last year. I think this team probably has more talent, but is also younger and maybe not quite as ready as that Miami team was to give the Sixers trouble. And they're handling them pretty well. It's just the playoffs. There's going to be some tight games. They pretty much blew them out games 2 and 3, and this was a tight one with their backs against the wall. Hopefully the Sixers can fucking close it out in 5. That'd be really nice.
Would be nice to get some time off. Maybe Orlando wins another game.
Would kill for an Orlando win tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd be great. Anything else? Anything else the Sixers-wise you had on your list
or
the rest of the NBA? What do you got?
I got a couple more things to talk about.
Okay.
Ben, this game, I thought, played a very nice game. I don't think wasn't quite as aggressive as he was in games 2 and 3. I think just having Embiid there a lot of the time doesn't lend himself to you know, put the team on his back as much and just sort of bowl into whoever's there. But I thought he played really well and for the most part very composed, made a bunch of nice passes. 15-8-8 is just really solid. I love he's still cutting on those off those pick and rolls and pin downs and just making himself available for like easy buckets inside, and that's huge. I want him, especially with Jimmy out of the game. And I think he did is like get downhill, and especially without Jared Dudley there to bother you, like you got to get to the rim every single time. And I think he did a pretty good job of that. And I was impressed with his defense once again. Like, you know, the Nets have shot makers. They're gonna hit shots if they go into isolation. A couple times swiped D'Angelo on a drive that was huge, and then that last play to win the game, walling off Jared Allen with Embiid and Tobias Harris, and then grabbing the ball from Jared Allen and staring him down. Come on, I want to drink that play like a fucking milkshake. It's really, really great. I love that. And we're the villains, like, officially. It's fine. I'm fine with it. I'm accepting it. Embiid, people don't like him if he's not ours. That's fine. Jimmy Butler, same thing. Ben Simmons, same thing. J.J. Redick, become like Duke J.J. Redick again. Mike Scott, do your thing. All that. Boban, growl at some fans.
We were during the whole rebuild, the Sixers were like sort of villains.
Very true.
You know, like we're better in that position. I thought Ben was better too. I mean, I thought Ben was good too. Obviously not as good as he was in the other game, but that sort of is, I agree on both sides. I think when everybody, forgetting about just Embiid, when everybody's there, there's really less opportunity for everyone to do everything that they do.
Yeah.
And I think him not attacking the, especially when he's not a great free throw shooter yet, doesn't need to attack on every play. But I do agree that once Butler comes out, I think I would have wanted that a little bit more than I saw it. Maybe that's easier said than done, but I thought there were more opportunities to do that than he did it.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think they especially as the game wound down, I think they were a little, he deferred pretty quickly to Tobias. In terms of like, hey, if they're going to foul me situations. And so I think it was, he was doing a little nice job, like posting up and being available underneath and letting the offense work through Joel, which was also fine. How do you feel about Joel and his seeming willingness to take threes a little bit more than last game? The last game he played game two, he didn't take any threes. This game he was 1 of 3.
Yeah. And in the first two, he passed them up. And I actually wrote down to talk about that. I didn't like that he was passing them up.
Yeah.
I am more like, I'm as pro Joel shooting threes as the people who don't like him shooting threes are the other way.
Yeah.
I think just, you know, because we said on the last pod, they have a bunch of guys that can shoot, but only a couple of shooters. And the more he can keep a defense honest and out of the paint by shooting those things, you even see like his effectiveness on that pump fake is less. They're not even coming out there anymore.
For sure.
So now I don't mind him going and taking a 14 footer mm-hmm. when that's there too, if he feels a little comfortable with it, but I'm fine with three. Three or four is a good number for him, but I'm fine with seven too.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm really, as it's totally up to him. I want him. I think Brett gives him the green light on those shots. And I absolutely would. Mm-hmm. I can see how, I mean, he just dominates the net so much. And my thinking is if he's out there and he gets the ball out there, I want him taking it. I wouldn't set him up out there all the time. I would set him up on the low block and make him, you know, face up and beat Jared Allen off the dribble and then have the whole court to himself, or if they double, then he can find those guys in the corner. But if he's going to set up from the top of the key, I want him taking those shots. He seems to be, I haven't looked at the shot chart numbers, but like he seems to be better on like foul line extended threes than he does like straight away. He seems to sort of like those angles more. Mm-hmm. But I'm totally fine with him shooting those shots. I mean, 31 points on 22 shots, 16 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 blocks, 2 steals. Just unbelievable. Just an unbelievable game.
An unbelievable game.
In 32 minutes in the playoffs when he's, you know, definitely not 100%. And now that we established Embiid, talk a little bit about Boban. Just like it wasn't good. Just like there haven't been many bad Boban games. Usually it's like, oh, he sort of just did his thing and then that was it. But like on both ends tonight, Boban was not good. And that was tough because this is a matchup that Boban should be able to be, you know, continuously exploit because he's so big and he got a couple offensive rebounds, but you know, he doesn't set up low enough. And that was a thing with Embiid earlier in his career. But like when Boban's got a 10 inch height advantage on whether it's Jared Dudley or Damari Carroll or Hollis Jefferson, like get lower and just like, if they're going to front you, then put them on your back or just like start. You shouldn't have to take like a one armed fadeaway with a guy 10 inches shorter than you, in front of you. So I'd really like him to get lower and just, you know, be aggressive down there. Because especially if he's far enough away, when he has to dribble, he's going to push off on that off arm. And they've called that a couple times on him this year. And I'd rather not that happen. But then defensively, the Nets, especially early on in the game, really figured out the pick and roll with Boban. They just cooked him a couple times. And I think he adjusted later in the game to a decent amount. But I was surprised by how good Boban was in games two and three. And this game, it was like that, you know, sort of regressed and corrected itself as Kenny Atkinson like went to it more.
Yeah, Boban, I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of Boban this series too. That's the other thing mm-hmm. too. The more of Boban we see, the more likely it is that the other team is going to figure out his, you know, weaknesses.
The one thing like
it was due to happen.
Obviously Embiid is a better defender and that's always going to be the case, but like the one thing that Embiid did that I would love for Boban to copy is Embiid got hurt on those Jared Allen lobs when it was LeVert or Dinwiddie or
or D'Angelo coming off the pick and roll also. But then Embiid started like committing one way or the other. And even if D'Angelo, there was one play when he just blocked a D'Angelo pass. And I would love for Boban to just like use his length and monster hands to affect something. It seems like he's hesitant to make a decision one way or the other, and then gets beat because Jared Allen, you can just throw it up to him and he's putting that down. So hopefully their coaching staff is working with him on how to just make a decision, and whether that's like, I'm going to stay with Jared Allen, and if he wants to take a 7-foot floater, that's fine. But tonight he got caught in between, and that wasn't successful. Those are my Boban thoughts.
Good Boban thoughts.
Thank you.
Agree.
A couple of math numbers for the math guy.
It's for our theories. Here's our theory, and here's our support for that.
That's right.
Here's our thesis, rather. Our support for that thesis. Fucking asshole. We had a couple of, I'll read one next time, but we had a couple of clapbacks in the iTunes reviews to that guy.
That's exciting.
So, yeah,
that's exciting
I like that. The one thing I wanted to say, though, about Boban is the Nets are a team that you can use Boban against. And oddly enough, I think the Raptors are also a team that you can use Boban against. But with Bolden being probably unplayable-ish. The thing about the small lineups, you were talking about the small ball lineup last pod, the Simmons at the center small ball lineup. Those are fine, and I'm fine with them doing them. But what I think people don't always realize when they talk about those lineups is because you're not using another guy, like it's just more minutes for the guys that you're already playing. And that's the problem with those lineups is that you can't, I think they only used it for 5 or 6 minutes in the last game. They just don't have enough players to be able to run that lineup a lot. Like there's not this other player that we're using unless you're dipping into the Korkmaz, Zaire Smith.
Right. Like, and especially without Jimmy, Jonathan that's why Simmons. You saw like 2 minutes of TJ where it was like, I guess this is kind of the best they got. And even going to that small ball five, you know, I think when Jimmy's there, you can go to those sort of multiple forwards and make do. But without it, it's like, what's your small ball five lineup? It's Mike Scott, it's James Ennis, it's Tobias Ben and Redick. Like that's not that great. I don't love that. That's pretty beatable on a bunch of ways. But I think for a time that's lets him do that, like maybe in the second or third quarter. But I think you don't want, this team was already giving up offensive rebounds early, and I don't think Brett was wrong to want to just keep one of Boban or Embiid in for almost all of the game just to keep them off the glass because they were getting beat on early. Last thing I want to say is JJ. Tough game for JJ. Had a great...
Did compete on defense.
Made a nice play on, I think it was D'Angelo when he slapped the ball and it was off D'Angelo's knee and out of bounds. That was a nice play. Also drew a couple offensive fouls on Joe Harris. That was nice. But I can't stop saying it. If he gets even slightly touched on any ball in traffic or if Embiid passes to him in the small quarters, he's losing that ball. He's not getting that loose ball. He never will. It is shocking that it does, even by accident, it doesn't happen just like something just like a magnet gets to his hands. But holy shit, that is frustrating. He hit his first two shots tonight and then missed his next eight until that big three at the end, which was a momentum three, which we have complained before about JJ usually missing. But and that when he hit that three, that was the first Sixers three in 27 minutes. So,
wow.
Yeah, ugly. It was not looking good for a while. They shot 8 of 26 from three. I thought that this is a, you know, for as many things that went wrong in this game for the Sixers to pull this game out was a really good sign going forward.
Yeah, he never hits that shot until he hit that shot.
Exactly.
That was about. But there was one loose ball on the TV side of the court that he really looked like he had a shot at, and he just watched it dribble out of the. And I thought of you as soon as I saw it.
I know,
it's
brutal.
Like, man,
and he's and a big I do shot, think though. I do think those shot like there was one or two shots that he took during that cold stretch where I was like, oh, he rushed that, and there's no reason to take that, and all that stuff. But for the most part, he still was getting his feet set and easing into them, and I think he's used his pump fake really well on those shots. But Sometimes they don't fall. I'm glad I hit the last one. Defensively, I thought he played really good deal on Joe Harris in games 2 and 3. I didn't think he played very well defensively in this one. Joe kind of like let him like went to the basket and went backdoor on him, and JJ was selling out for the three, which is fine. Joe Harris has been very bad shooting from the outside this series, even on shots he was open on. He missed 0 for 6 from 3. I just don't know how long that's going to happen. He's going to get hot eventually, but hopefully there's only one game left in the series, and then we can forget about it forever. But there was a time when he was on LeVert for a little bit, and that should be illegal. Someone should be arrested if that happens again. Like, it just can't happen. Anybody else. Legitimately anybody else.
Yeah, LeVert is fucking good, man.
I know, man. I wanted him. So
Dinwiddie I've seen plenty of. D'Angelo Russell, who isn't good, I've seen plenty of. Dinwiddie, who is good. D'Angelo Russell is like the third best of those three guys, in my opinion.
I agree.
Of Dinwiddie. LeVert is fucking good, though, man. Mm-hmm. He's like, there's a little Harrison Barnes to him almost, mm-hmm. like in his not in his game, like I think in his stature and his build and almost in his handle. And he's like, man, he can get shots up and he's athletic. And
he's really long.
Yeah, he's a good player, man. Yep. I like him.
I don't know where this 4 of 9 from the foul line came from, but if he hits 7 of those, I think they win that game. So I don't know what that is. But I mean, there's guys. This is like the Sixers have known that this is a problem for them all season long, and they kind of didn't correct it, and they've done enough over this series to get by, and have been helped by some fortuitous Nets misses on open looks. But I think the first half of this game, I didn't look it up exactly, but remember I was talking last podcast about how the Nets only had 12 assists in game 3. They had 23 in this game, but I think they had like 17 in the first half, or 16 or 17 in the first half. And
the first quarter was like
a lot.
It was noticeable how much they were moving the ball compared to the other games.
And I think part of it in the second half is they just scored 45 points compared to 63 in the first half. But the Sixers putting the clamps on and making guys beat them one-on-one. And then once again, like when guys don't touch the ball for a while or don't get shots for a while, then you're like, Damari Carroll or Trevion Graham is running into a three for the first time in, 10 minutes of gameplay. And it's like, they're cold, they're off. I think they got to do a better job of getting out on LeVert and Dinwiddie threes. They can't keep going behind the screen on that. Or at least take a dive on moving screens and hope that something happens. But they've done a good enough job of making guys beat them straight up, and combined with Joe Harris missing threes all series has been really helpful. But I think that was a good halftime adjustment of making them go back to like, forcing them to play one-on-one ball.
Yeah, I agree. It was scary how different the Nets were in the first quarter. It was so weird and so different. It felt like it was almost unsustainable to me. Like it just didn't seem like they hadn't played like that at all in any of the other three games.
Well, they went to, I think Kuroks is a decent player, and I think he's going to be a good pro, but he's been almost nothing all series long. And so taking him out of the rotation, I think was smart of them. And then really shortening up the rotation. They, aside from, Trevion Graham barely played until Dudley went out. So they really only went 8 deep, which is not what they're used to. They usually go 9. Sometimes even Shabazz Napier gets in there. But without Ed Davis, this team is, the Sixers should win. And Hollis Jefferson didn't play very well tonight. I think they, he had a good games 2 and 3. And if they keep putting Rondé on Embiid, I think it's just like they just got to get Embiid the ball every time. And I love every time Embiid get fronted. Like that's Simmons over the top, Tobias over the top. Like it's got to make them pay, and that's easy buckets. It's nice to get those easy buckets.
Mm-hmm. Here we are. 3-1 lead. The final game on Tuesday. I think the time is TBD.
Because there was some team that won. I think it's definitely at 5 now. Or sorry, 8.
5.
5 my time. 8 your time.
Okay. I was like, Fuck, man. That's going to be tough for me. Six I can handle. Okay. All right. Great. Great. I got fucking therapist at 6:30. Then I come home completely relaxed and free of all my problems. What a night.
Just close him out. Close him out at home. Get some rest.
Yes.
Like, if Embiid's healthy, absolutely play him. If the knee hurts, whatever, and you think you can beat him at home without him, that's fine. But I wouldn't get too cute, because you don't want to go back to Brooklyn for a game six.
No, because then you get rest on the backside of it if you win.
If he's feeling it, let him play.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. On the verge of another playoff series win of the rights to Ricky Sanchez era of Sixers basketball.
Wild,
as they will always call it. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know, lick face.
We are the murderous pair. Dead with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the kush. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. True runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cope in the clouds on a missile to turn.